Time now for the Yahoo Sports College Podcast with Dan Wetzel.
Let's go through on a scale of 1 to 10 the most miserable people in Tuscaloosa, Alabama right now.
Pete Thamel!
So I really think that Saban is going to fire the analyst in charge of hiring analysts.
And SI's Pat Forte!
That's a tough job. A very tough job. Billy Joe from Bessemer, best wishes to you.
Here's Pat, Pete, and Dan!
All right, welcome to the pod. It is a good thing we are taping this on Thursday morning on the East Coast. And Pat's very early out. He's out west. And Sully is too. Two in California right now. Because had we taped yesterday, we would have missed, just a little item. Just a little news item.
Yeah.
Nick Saban has COVID. He had reported yesterday. We were all on the Nick Saban Zoom where he seemed very energetic. And he reported he is asymptomatic. And he's got no problems, and he feels great. So we'll feel free to crack a couple jokes. This is a man who turned 69 this month. But do you get Fauci Cup bonus points if your head coach gets it?
Well, not just a head coach, the head coach in college football. Yeah, six national champions. That's six times the points right there.
Randy Edsall has a bonus for COVID in his contract. He would get $2,500.
Oh, extra, not just the $2,000. Yeah, well, I think that might work. No, obviously the big news is this is the week that COVID came for the SEC. The SEC waited until September 26th, watched Big 12 have all sorts of different issues, different things happening. This week it got real. Obviously you have Saban as now the poster child of this. He has the virus. We'll see what he's going to do. We'll talk about that. But the big game of the year is Georgia at Alabama, number 3 Georgia at number 2 Alabama, Saturday night, 8 p.m. You know this. We do not know whether there will be positives among the Alabama players. There will be additional testing. Hopefully this stuck with Nick Saban and Athletic Director Greg Byrne and didn't go further. But at this point, we're going to talk like Alabama, Georgia is on. We got no idea. Really, you got no idea on any of these games. We have picked games in this on the race for the case that did not happen.
That's right.
We also know that Missouri and Vanderbilt was canceled or postponed. Previously, I had no idea those two teams were playing and didn't care, but they got more hype for this game by having it postponed than if they had actually played the game.
Hey, we once talked about Central Arkansas UAB on the pod. We'll take
now Missouri coming off their big win. That has been postponed due to COVID. LSU at Florida. Florida does not have enough scholarship athletes. 19 Gators, at least, according to the student newspaper there, tested positive. That game has been moved to December 12th. If it's a big enough outbreak, you don't know whether they're going to be able to play Missouri the following week. And there's nowhere to move that game now. This thing crunches. It's a Jenga tower. Every one of these schedules, how many can you pull out and keep this thing? This, of course, came days after Dan Mullen, somewhat regrettable quote, where he was encouraging 90,000 to pack the swamp Saturday.
It's like more
than no game Saturday. Now there's no game. Tremendous quote by Scott Strickland, Mullen's boss, the AD at Florida. Coaches sometimes say things that are outside of their area of expertise. And they're really good at what they do. Dan is really good at calling ball plays. End quote.
Excellent quote.
Well, passive yes. Aggressive there. Like that.
Diplomatic insertion of the scalpel in his coach.
That's a good way to put it.
It's kind of Steve Spurrier almost in that.
Yes.
They're just, you know.
Yes.
Yeah.
You can't spell citrus plays, without guy. UT. Like, stick with your ball plays.
Yeah. It was pretty solid there. So we got that. That game is out. So who the heck knows? But Pat, your thoughts on the state of the SEC right now, college football, as we continue to go through this. And clearly we are not. Now we'll see. Maybe Alabama was able to contain this by doing daily testing. But clearly we are not at a spot where things are running smoothly. I never thought they would. I think the analogy I've been using all year is it's like driving through a snowstorm. Maybe it gets better for a second, but a squall could come at any moment. A truck can jackknife. We don't know. But here we are, shaky ground right now in trying to go forward playing in a pandemic. What do you think?
Yeah, this is what we signed up for, basically. This is what people wanted, was to play football during a pandemic, and it's going to be a mess. It has been messy. It's going to continue to be messy. Up until the last 10, 15 days, whatever the case is, the two places that hadn't been disrupted were the two highest levels of the game, the NFL and the SEC. And now both of them have been hit. In the NFL, we've had games moved around, postponed. There's been problems with the Titans, problems with the Patriots. We had now news that the Falcons have their facility shut down. And then the SEC, which I think was smart to wait until September 26th to play, to let the campus influx pass, subside to a degree. But that doesn't mean that everything's gone. And that doesn't mean you're out of the woods. And clearly now we're seeing the issues. And whether it's to do with traveling to games or not, we are now having impacts there. And they don't, as you said, there's a 1 week of cushion in the SEC. And after that, then you're going to start losing games. And this may get too far into the actual football weeds here, but these are their implications. If you're the college football playoff selection committee and say Georgia beats Alabama and Nick Saban doesn't coach, you have to decide, well, because Saban didn't coach, does that mean Alabama should get more credit for losing than they normally would? Does it mean that Georgia gets less credit for winning? The impacts that are part of the equation now. Secondly, that you're going to have different numbers of games, most likely. If Florida-Missouri doesn't happen, which it probably won't the next week, Florida's trying to win the SEC East, but you're going to play one fewer game than most of the other teams if they get all their games played. So this is what people want in football. We have football. I guess my question is, because I've gotten this on Twitter, is it a success? Is the season successful at this point? We've had basically 13%, I think, of the games postponed or canceled. What's the threshold? I mean, maybe we don't know. We don't decide that till the end of the year. But what's considered successful as far as pulling off the season?
I can't watch Vandy, Missouri, it's not successful. It's just not. No. Go ahead, Pete.
It's a great existential question as this goes. And I think like the turning point with the administrators, like why we're having a season right now, and the turning point with presidents and administrators was in June or July or whenever it was, when the Miami Marlins were a mess and they were the laughingstock of sports and MLB was supposed to shut down. Everyone said, well, college football can't be that way. College football can't be that way. And college football is that way. And the NFL is that way too. I mean, it's fitting to see the NFL flailing right now with the Falcons facility closed on Wednesday morning. The Patriots, Titans, the whole crew of them, they're obviously struggling with the virus. Like, they had been perfect for a few weeks, just like the SEC had three perfect weeks. I said to Greg Sankey yesterday when he called me back, I said, I'm going to write a column on the SEC's messy week. And he quickly corrected me and he said the SEC's first messy week, which it is in a sense. So I think 29 games canceled at this point as of Thursday morning, Pat, is that right?
And 29 and 140 played, I believe.
Okay. And then two of those obviously are from the SEC. So, the SEC is ahead in a lot of ways, but they're also behind because they played less and started a month later than some folks. So it's a really interesting question, but I do think for these leagues, the driver of this has always been money. And oh God, the coaches and ADs who sit around and say it's not about money. They just make me roll my eyes you want to pass out when you hear it. This has been an inventory play. It's been an inventory play all along. And success at the most basic bottom line for these conferences is going to be, do we hit our television thresholds of games?
We were all on the Zoom call, I believe, of Nick Saban on Wednesday night. And he looked good. He was really trying to convey a message that he was fine. And we hope that that remains. Clearly with this thing, it's unpredictable. You don't know who it hits hard, who it hits easy. Anything can happen. So we're thinking of that. However, when Nick Saban gets sick, there is a lot of misery in the state of Alabama, and not just concern from Alabama fans,
right?
But misery on the people inside the Alabama football program. And not just their concern, but just logistically. Like yesterday or Wednesday night, Nick Saban said that he watched the Alabama practice via live video. And then he had like a telephone connection with a manager, is how I think he said it. I believe student manager, but at least manager. I don't know if we have adult managers, but he had a guy there on the phone, and he would say, you know, if he thought maybe they could run a playback so they do a little bit better job, or maybe there was a teachable moment for one of the players in terms of effort or fundamentals that maybe they could work on. That's how he described. I believe it was maybe a slightly more aggressive communication.
You think?
I think it would be slightly more aggressive of Nick Saban wandering around his home office watching this video of practice. So I want to go through this. Let's go through on a scale of 1 to 10, the most miserable people in Tuscaloosa, Alabama right now.
All right.
Okay. 1 to 10.
Let's go.
How miserable is this person? And let's start with that anonymous student manager who apparently is holding a telephone and having to be the middleman to communicate accurately and quite quickly what Nick Saban is saying. How miserable of a job is that for this poor kid who's probably just like a junior from the suburbs of Birmingham who thought it'd be cool to sign up for this?
Scale of 1 to 10, that's a 12. That's a tough job. Very tough job. And yes, if that is Billy Joe from Bessemer, who's you know, a sports administration major who ends up in that role. Oh, boy. Because as you were alluding to, Nick Saban, not overly patient. Nick Saban, rather strident. Nick Saban, frustrated as hell that he's not there. It's the biggest week of the season, and he's at his house trying to do some stuff on the Zoom. I mean, are you kidding me? He's not a happy man. So I would say that's a tough job, a very tough job. Billy Joe from Bessemer, best wishes to you.
So I really think that Saban is going to fire the analyst in charge of hiring analysts, because they did not think of having an analyst to be the COVID echo phone, I guess would be like the lack of a way to put it. Like, how could somebody not have seen this problem coming and they have not like found another fired coach to be the person who will echo what Nick Saban has to say via practice and make sure they run the playback and get it right? I think that is a drastic failure in the Alabama machine, and there will be hell to pay.
I mean, they got 645 guys on that assistant coaching staff.
Oh, yeah.
Including 5 head coaches, right? What are they, Pete?
Charlie Strong, Mike Stoops, Major Applewhite, Butch Jones, and Sark. And we may be missing one.
And not just head coaches. The former head coaches at USC, Texas, Arizona, Houston, and Tennessee.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not to mention other stops along the way.
Yeah.
Yep.
Pretty good staff you got there.
Yeah. And only one of them is an actual on-field coach.
Yeah. The rest of them just hanging out.
Think about it.
Dreamland, kept getting paid by your other schools. That's why you don't donate to your school. Look what you're doing.
There we go.
Look at how many fans at all those schools who donated money. You're just paying for these guys to sit around Tuscaloosa and eat Dreamland every day.
Let me just make this point. A bunch of them are actually still getting paid by their prior schools. Sully's tuition is paying Butch Jones still, which is great. And in talking to a scout yesterday, we were talking about Bill O'Brien and whether he goes. And the scout was like, you know, the big joke in the NFL is Bill O'Brien's going to be an unpaid Patriots, analyst, offensive analyst in the next in the upcoming weeks for the playoffs. But where did Saban get the idea? Belichick's been doing it for years.
Yeah, sure. Load them up. Why not take these guys? All right, well, let's take Sark. Steve Sarkisian, former head coach at USC. Washington replaced Lane Kiffin when Lane got fired in the middle of the playoffs because Saban was sick of him. How miserable is Sark right now? Because Sark is technically in charge. Although if you listen to the Zoom, Saban didn't really admit that. He just said Sark is over there. He didn't say Steve Sarkisian will be our interim coach while I am quarantined with this. He didn't seem to offer any, there was no like equal footing here, or he didn't get a promotion. So now Sark is got to be getting 50 phone calls a day from Nick Saban. None of them pleasant. None of them. I think you did a moderately good job executing what I wanted you to communicate. Pete, how miserable is Sark?
Sark makes $2.5 million a year, so he knows what he signed up for. There is certainly a misery element to Sark, but there's also just like so many other people in that operation. And I will not say Saban is hands off with the offense. That would not be accurate, but he is more hands on with the defense, and he's going to have more suggestions, alterations, etc. Sark just knows that like he can't pass the ball 66 times on Saturday, because that's when Nick gets most mad, when Lane doesn't run the damn ball.
That would have been good if Lane was there. He could have gone
Could you imagine?
The 76-yard field goal, that type of stuff. Yeah.
If Lane were in charge, that would have been so, because Lane would go Al Haig, I'm in charge here. You know? Remember that with the Reagan administration when it was like Reagan had this and George Bush had that, and Al Haig put himself in charge. That would be Lane. unfortunately, he's not. But Sark's an 11 on a scale of 1 to 10 in misery, because I'm sure his phone is ringing off the hook. He's getting texts constantly, if Saban does text or if he makes the manager do the text for him. I would bet the first conversation was, hey, Sark, look, I tested positive. I can't be there. You know, you're going to do a great job. And then within 5 minutes, it was like, you're doing a shitty job. You know, you need to do this. You need to do that. Don't forget about this. Don't forget about that. And he is going to be a hell of a backseat driver for the rest of this week. That's for sure.
Now, Lane could have gotten his ultimate revenge on Saban by giving him the virus. We don't know. They did play Saturday night.
Absolutely.
And Ole Miss, Kiffin said, we're not. There's an outbreak at Ole Miss. We don't know whether their game against Arkansas will be played.
Yeah,
hopefully. But he revealed we are not in a great situation number-wise at all. That was Wednesday. Again, normally you can do this podcast. There is an ebb and flow to the season.
Sure.
And you can do this podcast and not really worry too much about, like, breaking news is like someone sprained an ankle. Not half the slate is canceled, or our Hall of Fame coach, the most famous guy in the sport, is out. Does Saban have to cancel his Aflac commercials? Can he still do those? Is that
would be pretty surreal if he was watching the game at home and he's watching himself in a commercial while he's seething about the lack of like Will linebacker pressure.
Yeah. I thought he was a better actor in The Blind Side than those Aflac commercials. Really stiff in the Aflac commercials. I don't get it. All right, let's go to the next one. Saban is a strategic mastermind at getting through adversity or challenges that are presented him for him. So I have two people. One is his doctor that he's got to be saying, you know, you need five negative tests. What if I take five in a row or something? But also the logistics guy, because Saban didn't quite admit that he wouldn't be there on Saturday. He has yet to say, he said, we're going to look into that. We're going to do some research. The rules are fairly clear that he cannot coach, but does he go with the Hugh Freeze dentist chair and an empty luxury box of Bryant Denny Stadium? Could that work? There was on Twitter, there was a give Saban the Booger Mobile, the Booger McFarlane. Remember that thing he used to ride around in on Monday Night Football?
The worst thing Monday Night Football ever came up with.
And they would block the fans. They'd all get mad at Booger McFarlane. Yeah. That is like, that was the stupidest thing ever. But
it was even worse than Dennis Miller.
You perch him up there, he's 6 feet. Dennis Miller, yeah. They did have, why are they always screwing with that thing? Just show the game.
Yeah.
Rush Limbaugh, they tried that one. Then, like, two weeks in, they're like, people don't like him.
Yeah.
Gee, really?
Yes.
All right. You took a political commentator and put him on the show. He could be isolated on the Booger Mobile. No one's within 6 feet. He could be up there. How miserable is Saban concocting these plans on how he can still coach? And whoever the hell he's running this by, and it might be Greg Byrne, the AD, who also has COVID, and we are thinking of, we hope he gets better. Because he's got, you know, Saban's calling him at all hours of the night because he's isolated too. So how miserable is the logistics guy?
That's over a 10 on a scale of 1 to 10 as well, because that's the thing is Alabama being Alabama, Saban being Saban, they will push the envelope as far as they possibly can to figure out some way to involve Saban in the game. And, you know, the rules that I understand it is like 90 minutes before the game till the end of the game, halftime included, no communication. And you can't have cell phones in the press box or anything like that, in the coaches' boxes. So he has to be hands off. Now, again, do they find ways around that? They'll try, I would bet. And for people, for SEC fans who have been convinced for decades that Alabama always gets a little bit of a love pat from the SEC office, if Saban somehow finds a way to be at the stadium or have communication with the coaching staff of some kind, that'll set the SEC conspiracy theorists ablaze all over again. So I don't know how this is all going to work out, but whoever's listening to Saban and Greg Byrne try to come up with ways where Saban can coach this game, good luck to you.
I really think the IT guy is the most miserable of all, because that dude's got to wear a hazmat suit, go to Saban's house, and deal with a soon-to-be 69-year-old technophobe, and have the perfect angle for practice video, have the Zoom working seamlessly, and Nick Saban is not going to be a low-maintenance technology customer when he has to run his program remotely. Like, there are going to be issues, and he is not going to be able to solve them quickly. And so, how about that call? Do you want to go to Saban's house in the hazmat suit? Do you want to go to Saban's house? Like the IT guys are sitting in their cubicles right now in the Alabama Athletic Department with their hands over their head. What a miserable existence.
How about if they gave it back to him and said, we'll be there between 12 and 4?
Yeah. Hey, can you imagine if his cable goes out on Saturday?
Oh, goodness. Holy
imagine
cow.
Imagine that call to Comcast.
How about who on the staff has to tell Saban that his Zoom is on mute?
That's a good point.
Or do you just sit there and go, he's just giving us one of these quote-unquote ass chewings right now. Yeah. Just let him talk. It's on mute. Or they'll just mute him in the Sark muting him.
Right.
You see Saban a lot on mute doing the air quotes, like you call that gap integrity.
It's just what I'm saying. These guys, they rip their jeans now. These kids, they rip their jeans. When I was so poor in West Virginia, I would never rip my jean. All right. I think that the communication, you cannot call into the stadium. If Saban is not in the Hugh Freeze dentist chair or not on the Booger Mobile, he will communicate. I believe Nick Saban will construct a fire pit in his backyard. He will be doing smoke signals in an elaborate language that will be that Georgia will not be able to crack it. Okay, like the old wind talkers that helped win America win World War II. Nick Saban will be doing smoke signals. There will be a team of undergrads at Alabama. They will quickly assemble a 3-credit course to learn this thing in the next 48 hours. They will all have mopeds. They will see the signal and they will ride from Nick Saban's palatial house, I'm sure, down to the stadium, and immediately it'll be like, or they'll just line up every Alabama student and they'll just run it down like a game of telephone.
Yeah, but then eventually that goes all wrong and the cover two trap ends up becoming, run the ball on 4th and 9 by
good
the time
point,
it gets
cause
to the stadium.
Good point, because there's going to be one kid in there who like is an Auburn fan but got a free ride to Alabama, so he went to Alabama. Yeah, that wouldn't work. But you'd have to have great loyalty.
Oh, yeah.
Saving Private Ryan. You will get this message through.
They definitely have an analyst for smoke signals on their staff. So I'm not talking about it. Sure. Some guy's making 400 large just in case this happened.
Just in case. That's right.
All right. And finally, how about Miss Terry, the lovely and very patient wife of Nick Saban, who I believe he talks to for 10 minutes every morning before he goes to work at like 3 a.m. Now, Miss Terry is going to be in this house with Coach Saban. And if he is stuck watching this game on Saturday night, let alone the hours into it, this is misery. You do not want to be trapped with this caged animal ranting and raving. My only hope for Miss Terry is she can say, you are sick with a virus. I will be on the other side of the house. You stay quarantined in your little room. And I do believe Nick listens to Miss Terry.
He does. He does. That's why I would give her a 9.5 on a 1 to 10 scale of misery, because she's been around him for 5 decades. She knows what she signed up for here, and she knows how to deal with him. So she can handle this as much as anybody has to handle it or can handle it. If I were her, I would say I'm going to the game. I'm going to go sit in the box, man. I'm out of there. Although she probably is in quarantine herself, I would think. She might not be able to pull that off. But that would be the surest way to get away from him, is to go sit in the coach's box, the coach's family's box at Bryant-Denny.
Miss Tara's got it tough, Dan, because, you know, she's going to have to deal with the menu, like the game day food. Like, there's going to be all these things that, like, come up. Can you imagine, like, the cable guy? Like, all like the television situation, and just remotely with the, you know, like I wouldn't want to be around anybody that has the virus for any period of time. You know what I mean? Just like, that's not, yeah. And Miss Terry's forever young, but like, that's there are a lot of awkward things that are going to be happening in the Nick Saban orbit over the next couple of days.
Do you think Nick Saban can barbecue his own meal? Now, the man has lived in Alabama and Louisiana a long time. Has he learned anything, or did this bring in the dreamland, bring in the Archibald, something like that?
He is not a man of varied interests. I don't really think he's had many interests in that.
The other thing is, too, I mean, he's so impatient, and you're going to smoke meat that takes hours. So my guess is, I mean, I could see him trying it, and he like puts it on, and then he's like opening the grill every 8 minutes. Are we done? We done? We done?
And trust the process. Trust the process.
Yeah. You bring over the analyst in charge of meat smoking to do that process for you.
They got a state full of those.
All right. Well, get well, Coach Saban, please. And Athletic Director Byrne, you too. We're thinking of you too. All right. Let's talk about this actual game. Hopefully it is getting played. Hopefully the daily testing is confined it just to Saban. It hasn't got the players. We'll see. But huge game, number two, number three. It's mid-October, and this is our first big game. This is our first legitimately big game. We've had some good games, but nothing where you're excited and you're plotting out what you're going to do Saturday night. So hopefully this thing gets down. It is not a do or die game. They are in opposite divisions of the SEC. So whether it's this year or any year, they both still have a path to get to Atlanta for the SEC championship game. And whoever wins the SEC championship game will go to the playoff guaranteed. So it's a little bit of a warm-up, but it's still a massive game, huge rivalry. Kirby Smart, obviously longtime former Saban assistant, tons of great memories here. Break down your thoughts on the actual football. I know we're gonna talk football, scary, but not for you. You can handle it. On what we might see on Saturday night.
Sure. So I did a big breakdown where I talked to coaches and scouts on Yahoo this week on this game, and I think the most interesting aspect of it, Dan, is that Alabama has essentially become what Nick Saban despised. 8 years ago, Saban had his famous quote. It was 2012, Baylor, Oregon, Ole Miss were all running a million miles an hour and 100 plays. And Saban said, is this what we want football to be? And remember, he railed against the rules. He did not want football to evolve into this pinball 51-49 way. Well, guess what? 8 years later, that's exactly what Alabama is. Now, they are not the same caliber of breakneck tempo, but they are so defensively deficient right now that in order to win the SEC this year, they are going to have to rely on outscoring people in high-scoring games because their defenses simply can't stop. And remember, one of the key aspects of tempo is you need to get the ball back, and their defense, as we saw against Ole Miss, was giving the ball back very quickly the other night. And then you look at the other side with Georgia. Georgia right now is embryonic Alabama in Saban's early years. Georgia has the best defense in the country. They have an elite, elite nose tackle. They have a very good cover corner who's probably going to be a first-round pick. And then they have a deep rotation of guys who've played. There aren't inexperienced guys to pick on on that Georgia defense. I think Dan Lanning is probably the hottest coordinator in the SEC right now, and his unit is really the star of the show. Now, on offense, Georgia is what Alabama once was. Stetson Bennett is a game manager. That's probably the politest way to say it. And he is the type of quarterback that a Saban defense used to swallow whole. This defense, especially because the defensive line isn't very good, is not equipped to do that. So Georgia wants to beat you 23-20. Alabama needs to beat you 41-38. And it's a classic clash of an elite Alabama offense, an elite Georgia defense, a mediocre Georgia offense, and a mediocre Alabama defense.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, it is basically Saban 2020 against Saban 2012 is this matchup. And it's really interesting because it is strength on strength. It's good on good. I think the Alabama offensive line is fantastic. Georgia's front seven is fantastic. You mentioned Jordan Davis, the nose guard. He's outstanding. But, man, their linebackers really play as well. You know, they play 3-4, but they fly to the ball. They pressure. They blitz those guys effectively and creatively. Azeez Ojulari is extremely good. Monty Rice is extremely good. And then the other great matchup to me is Bama's wide receivers, who I think are the best in the country, against Georgia's secondary, which I think is probably the best in the country. I mean, there are a lot of future NFL players going at each other just in those two units alone. And the Georgia defense is, I think it's absolutely the best in the nation at this point. If you look just at the SEC in what used to be, you know, that relentless defensive league and now is a touch football league, except Georgia. Georgia by far has allowed the fewest rushing yards in the conference and also by far has allowed the fewest passing yards in the conference. They are so far ahead of everyone else from a defensive standpoint through three games that it's pretty remarkable. And I got on the Kirby Smart Zoom and I asked him, one of the things they've done, they didn't against Auburn. They jumped on Auburn pretty quickly, but against Tennessee and against Arkansas, they were behind at halftime and then they obliterated them in the second half. Combined margin, I want to say is 59-3 in those two games in the second half. And he said, we play a lot of guys and we rotate them in, and defensively, the other team starts wearing down, starts pressing, and we are just coming at them harder and harder as the game goes on. So I think Georgia has the manpower right now and the mentality to win the game, even if Nick Saban were coaching.
I think that it's unfair to call Stetson Bennett, the law firm, our Manhattan white shoe law firm, a game manager. Very, very accurate. No, he is a little bit of a game manager. I do think that how he handles it will be a big, probably the critical player in this game going forward. All right, we're going to pick some games in a minute. Few other items that came up. We officially got the, this should be fascinating, records no longer matter in bowl selections.
Yeah.
Everybody is now eligible. Which means like some 2-6 Purdue team is going to get a bid over like a 6-2 Arkansas State or something like that, right? Like this is the bowl game, bowl director dream. We don't have any rules now. Everybody is bowl eligible. But as we kick forward, it's really the only way. But it does look like a lot of teams are going to play. My alma mater is entering the fray, jumping in the pool.
How about that?
UMass has got a game. They're playing Georgia Southern. If you want to know how bad things are with COVID, the UMass Georgia Southern game is on ESPN2.
That's pitiful.
At like 3:30.
Come on.
It is.
Oh, my goodness. That is sad.
That is where we're at. There's not a lot to watch until late. I think UMass actually screwed up. I believe UMass, Ralph Russo had this. They should be the break the glass guys. If your game got canceled, you can call UMass at the last minute.
Yes.
And I think they settled for Georgia Southern too early. UMass has no games. Now they have one. They have a one-game season at this point. Had they waited and set up like an eBay system and all bids are due by 11 o'clock on Wednesday night, like LSU could have paid him to come down, right? Wait for the big schools to get their game canceled and then just sit there. How much money are you going to pay us? $1 million, $2 million, $3 million? And then just fly to, I mean, who cares if you're prepping?
Is this why you don't donate, Dan? Because they're not thinking strategically enough for you?
Yes.
That's it.
This is exactly why.
If what this is basically like, you get in your car and drive down to the playground with your four other guys, and you're like, hey, anybody want to run? We got a pickup game? Let's go. Let's play.
Georgia Southern should be doing the same thing. They shouldn't be playing each other. They should be waiting. These games are going to get canceled every week. There's going to be a big schools desperate for a game. You don't think LSU, how about LSU could use a game against UMass to get a win and get their act together?
There you go.
Yep, but it's conference only in the SEC. They're not making exceptions for your alma mater.
Well, yeah.
as
conference only, half the games are canceled. How's that working?
Speaking of which, Cincinnati Tulsa just put canceled or postponed per report. So we'll see if that bears out. But one more this week.
Yeah, there are a few people reported it. I think it's not happening. Yeah.
All right, not good.
Number 30.
Yep. All right, before we get to race for the case, we do have one way for Coach Saban to get through the game. A Texas brewery has released a new beer, and I want to play a quick game of would you drink it, I guess.
Okay.
We usually play would you eat it. This highbrow podcast that we are. The beer is Buffalo Sauce Beer. It's called Buffalo Wangs. W-A-N-G-Z, which is a little scary. I don't want a buffalo wang, but there is a Z on the end. Literally a buffalo wing sauce sour beer. 5.2% alcohol. This is from the Martin House Brewing Company in Fort Worth, Texas. We made a buffalo wing sauce beer. Can't emphasize how much this is actually a buffalo wing sauce beer, they're repeating. So if you get down with Frank's and a little spice, then this one's for you. Pat 40, beer snob that you are, would you drink Buffalo Wang's beer?
I would absolutely drink at least 12 ounces of that. Yes, because A, it's beer, and B, I love buffalo chicken wings, probably my favorite food other than like a good steak or something. So yes, I would give it a try. And if I open a beer, I always finish a beer. So I'm in.
So, you know, Pete, you know, this is a lowbrow podcast when I'm the one with refined tastes. all that said, I would love to try this beer. I don't think it would taste good, but I'm like, I love wings too, man. Wings are like one of my favorite foods. That was one of the things about Syracuse is a great wing city where I went to college. And we crush wings from Dorian's. Yeah, I can't get enough good chicken wings. I even grill them now to try to be a little bit healthier. But yeah,
yes,
love me some chicken wings. So I would definitely line up to try the chicken wing beer. Sully, get us some free Buffalo Wangs beer sent our way so we can try it on the pod.
Let's go, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll hype the Martin House Brewery in Fort Worth, Texas. If you're in the area, stop by.
There we go.
We have one review online from Twitter follower Wombat Matt. Okay. Wombat Matt did have some, apparently. At least he said so on Twitter. His review is, I'm towards the end of it now. Definitely drinkable, but I'm not having another tonight. LOL. Sour on the front end and spicy as all get out on the back end with a subtle buffalo wing sauce flavor.
Spicy on the back end, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I believe it. Sure.
It looks like a Bloody Mary in this glass.
Oh, I don't know about that action.
My concern is, I guess I have to mentally get past how thick buffalo wings, like I'm just...
Yeah.
I would absolutely drink it.
Yeah.
There's no question.
We figured Mr. Busch Light would not turn his nose up. Oh, man. This one.
Yeah. If you had six of those, you are going to be in the fetal position the next day.
Doesn't seem like a beer you're just going to crush. Yeah. You're going to crush a bunch of those.
Yeah. This isn't like Corona Light on a lazy Saturday in the summer.
What's happening the next day is not going to be.
Nope. Not good.
Good Lord. There is serious and, man, I don't know.
Serious and long-lasting
even when you have to, like, you know, you have to just get it out. You know, drink a lot of beer, you have to go to the bathroom, right? Mm-hmm. Like, would the spice come out that way?
I don't know.
A lot of questions, but Wombat Matt seems to have survived.
Okay.
So, anyway,
and we fully trust Wombat Matt. He is infallible.
Seems like a good dude. Seems like a good dude. All right, race for the case. Pat and Pete are Sully's got you at 18-17-1, but I have an 18-18-1. Sully 16-19-1. I'm 13-22 because we're the fat bear week pick is counting.
Nad is the new tap, man. It is the season is bearing itself out.
Dan did just try to gloss right over those standings.
Yes.
While accenting the fat bear victory.
Fat bear. I'm 1-0 in fat bear.
Yeah.
So, all right.
That is correct. You're 1-0 in fat bear in 13-22-1 in Race to the Case. That is correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah, there you go.
All the people listening to this National Geographic podcast will really be excited for your fat bear projections.
Oh yeah.
Listen. A win is a win. Okay. Coach Saban doesn't excuse any of them. I don't like how you guys talk down the competition. Right. Gives us inflated egos. All right. BYU at Houston, 9:30 ESPN. This is Friday night game.
Friday night. A good one.
BYU's given 5. That's a nice game. And BYU is 11-5 against the spread in their last 16 road games, for whatever that's worth. Pat Forty, who you got?
I really like this game because I've really liked BYU all year, the way they've played. They did struggle a bit against UTSA last week, but UTSA isn't bad. And then Houston, I got to take my hat off, man. Hadn't played a game all year, and then last week get down in their first game. They look like they haven't played, and they get down 24-7 and then annihilated Tulane after that. I think BYU is a pretty complete team. They got to deal with Marquez Stevenson, who's really fast for Houston, but I like BYU. I think BYU wins and covers the what's our spread on this? 5. Okay, yeah, give me BYU and I'll lay the 5.
So I was deep in Cougar lore this week. So I'm doing a story on Zach Wilson, who is the quarterback for BYU, who is rocketing up draft boards. Really a fun player. Like if you've listened this deep in this podcast, you clearly love college football. You will enjoy watching Zach Wilson play this Friday. If you listen to this podcast, you've probably already seen him play. He has a pinch, and I'm not comparing him to him, but he has a pinch of Mahomes in him. No-look passes, improvisational flair, really natural thrower, doesn't have that caliber of arm, but is just a really dynamic, fun guy to watch. Really, really good, big character, too. I enjoyed getting to know him a little bit this week. So all that said, this game, what's the over-under, Sully? It's got to be like 212.
It is 62.5.
The over-under is only 62.5?
Wow. I mean, BYU's defense is pretty good.
BYU's defense is pretty good against some bad offenses. I think BYU's defense got exposed to be a pinch slow in places. They do they play like a drop 8 kind of gunky 3-man front Baylor Iowa State stuff. So I'm going to take Houston with the points, with the thought that Marquez Stevenson and their skill speed will allow them to compete in a track meet, perhaps win a track meet. And I was really impressed with Houston's defense after they got down. I thought they really did a good job pressuring Tulane's quarterback and really slowing down what's been a decently dynamic Tulane offense. And complimenting the Houston defense hasn't been anything that's happened in the last 4 or 5 years. So I am going to take the home dog and go with the Cougs.
Home dog on a weeknight,
I should say.
Yeah. The Houston Cougs. Yes, they're both Cougars. Cougars will win. Put me down for that. I got Cougars. Weeknight home dog, but I don't know. With COVID, you're not going to get that wild crowd that you usually get.
I've been to games there. I wouldn't say it's wild.
No, and especially now.
Yeah,
right?
There is a crowd. There will be a crowd. BYU has not played in front of a crowd.
You get the big Thursday night game. I'm taking BYU in this game, despite giving the points. All right.
This How about Sully?
Sully. I'm sorry.
All good. Yeah, I'll take Houston with Pete. UTSA almost had 400 yards through the air, and now they're going up against Hogo and company. Ooh, not good. Give me the Houston Cougars.
All right. It's probably the second best game of the weekend. Looking this late. All right. Pitt at Miami. Noon ACC Network. Jeez. Pitt's defense rate 6th in the country in yards allowed. 263 a game. Miami is giving 13.5.
Taking Pitt all day here. It's going to be a low scoring game. Pitt's defense is elite. Miami's offensive line got exposed against Clemson. That's obviously going to happen. I don't think Miami's offensive line is as good as they looked in the first few weeks. They're probably not as bad as they looked against Clemson, but I really feel like Pitt can make this a brawl and cover. And Miami's got to be reeling coming off that the high of playing in that game and then getting smacked back to irrelevancy.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Pat.
All right, I'm going to go with Pitt there as well, just because you're getting 13.5. I think that it is going to be close. The only concern for Pittsburgh is Miami. What Miami does is they put it all up front and they get after the quarterback. They rush upfield, so you got to be able to hit them underneath with some running plays, which they did with Travis Etienne. Pitt can't run the ball very well, so I don't think Pitt can win, but I think they can keep it close enough because they're good defensively. And cover the number at least.
Kenny Pickett is questionable for this game, by the way, the Pitt quarterback.
That adds another wrinkle.
That
to
was
it.
As of 2 days ago, and Narduzzi called him banged up. But I got a feeling I watched the end of Pitt BC when Kenny Pickett was banged up. He's a tough kid. I would be surprised if Kenny Pickett didn't play at Miami.
I agree. I think Kenny Pickett will play. His offensive line was singing his praises, inspired by his ability to play through the pain. And he will play through the pain and give Miami a game on Saturday. Give me the Panthers.
Too many points, so I'm going to take the Panthers. I do like this Miami team, but you also come off of a game with Clemson probably just beaten up physically a little bit. All right, Liberty. Coach Freeze, undefeated at Syracuse. Liberty is at Syracuse. Syracuse is an ACC program, allegedly. Liberty is at an ACC team, and they are the favorites by 3.5. Good Lord. this thing is on Watch ESPN. Hugh Freeze will be an SEC coach by next year. I don't think there's any question.
No dental chair in this game, and no Tommy DeVito for the Orange. Going to be trouble. Give me Liberty and the Fighting Hugh Freezes.
Yeah, for accuracy's sake, that was the hospital bed game. The dental chair game was at Louisiana Lafayette the next week, as Hugh found various ways to coach his team absurdly last year. But Hugh's 4-0. Syracuse is bad. I'm going with you, and I'm going with Liberty there to get to 5-0 and win in the Carrier Dome and cover.
I think Liberty could blow them out. I was going to actually pick this game for my lock of the week and take Liberty. Just Tommy DeVito, Syracuse starting quarterback, is hurt. Their backup is Rex Culpepper, is one of the best stories in college football. He's not a very good player. Rex came back from cancer and it threw a touchdown pass earlier in the year. It was inspiring. Syracuse's offense stinks, and their defense is without its best player, Andre Sisco, who injured himself in pregame warmups, I believe before the Georgia Tech game, and he has opted out for the season and declared for the NFL draft this week. And it's just been one thing after another for Syracuse in terms of the injury bug this year. And they've been trying to play a lot of guys and essentially plan for the future, but it is a mess up there on both sides of the ball. And I think Liberty, with the deficiencies in the Syracuse secondary, could really run them.
I'm not going to lone wolf and take Syracuse. I can tell you that. I will go with Liberty on that. They look better. All right, UCF at Memphis. This should have been a great game, except UCF lost to Tulsa. 3:30 on ABC. Love seeing the American get these kind of big time game nights, time slots. Memphis hasn't lost a home game since these teams last met in the regular season in 2018. We had a little different scene at the Liberty Bowl. UCF is giving 3.5. So Memphis Tigers are home dogs. Pete.
Yeah, I'm going to take UCF here. I've been impressed with what they did the first couple weeks. They flopped against Tulsa, made a lot more mistakes than they had been making. And Tulsa is not a bad opponent. So this Memphis team is not as good as previous ones. The loss of some skill players and then the loss of the coaching turnover from Mike Norvell to Ryan Silverfield, I think it's caught up with them a little bit. Dylan Gabriel bounces back after not having a great game against Tulsa and has a very good game here, and UCF wins and covers.
I'll take UCF also. I'll move in on that. I think they're angry after that Tulsa loss and are going to They still got something to play for. Sully?
Yeah, give me UCF and their nation best total offense. I think they put up, you know, over 500 yards a game. They're rolling. Give me the Golden Knights.
I hate to sing in a chorus with you guys, especially when Dan picked them. But I Memphis was interesting because they really laid an egg early against SMU and then came back and played pretty well. But it is still not the they essentially took a month off after their opener. It is not the Memphis we knew. I felt like Tulsa could be competitive with UCF because they had the personnel in the secondary to beat up and slow down their receivers. I do not think Memphis has the personnel in the secondary to do that. So I think UCF can win this one going away.
All right. We already kind of broke this game down. Georgia at Bama, 8 p.m. Bama is a 4-point favorite at this moment. BetMGM has taken down the line. I mean, that's how big Coach Saban is to this thing. So let's just try to make the picks without too much breakdown. Pat, we'll start with you.
Yep. I think I kind of alluded to it during my little spiel there. So I think I think this is the time for an assistant to beat Saban, especially if Saban isn't at the stadium. I think that Georgia has the team to do it. I think Alabama's defensive vulnerability is what it is. Give me the Dogs, win, cover.
I think the Dogs win straight up too, and with or without Saban, quite frankly. The interesting thing to me will be, can Alabama's defense get good enough to win the rematch? And that's, you know, as we go down the line. But I think Georgia right now, over the years in these SEC games where it's the high flying offense versus the epic defense usually wins.
Oh man, you guys are changing my tune here. I was going to go Georgia, but given the opportunity, and now that the line's come down from 6, let's try to lone wolf here and let's go the Tide. Win one for the Gipper. Saban's not going to be on the sideline. I love this Georgia defense, and I honestly hate my pick, but you gave me the opportunity. I'll take Bama.
I like Georgia. I like this defense. I think, you know, there's this group text that they have between all the former Saban assistants who are coaches, head coaches. So, you know, we got Kirby Smart and Lane are going to be chatting. I mean, they torched them last week. I think that exposed a lot that Georgia will be able to exploit. So take Georgia. So Sully has got the lone dog, the lone wolf. Lock of the week. Pat, we'll start with you if you're ready.
I'm ready. I have to take my hat off to Sully, who announced I hate my pick and then made it anyway. But that's...
I'm going to hate my lock of the week, too.
Okay. My lock of the week, when in doubt, bet against Kansas, which is an absolute train wreck. They are winless. They are hopeless. They haven't come close yet, and they're not going to be close at West Virginia, which is getting better in year two under Neil Brown. Pretty big number, Sully. I've got it at 22.5, but I am comfortable with that. I think West Virginia is 4 touchdowns better than Kansas. And I'm not sure what Les Miles' status is for this game. He tested positive for COVID. I don't know whether he will be there or not, but one more thing for Kansas to deal with in addition to being lousy. So give me West Virginia to win and cover the big number.
22.5 is what I got.
Okay. That's what I got. Yep.
I am dueling in my head between taking SMU at Tulane and taking Texas A&M at Mississippi State. And I'm going to take Texas A&M at Mississippi State. Texas A&M is -5, and we saw the perils of road favorites with Florida going to Texas A&M last week. But I really think that Mike Elko is creative enough defensively to put up a fight against Mike Leach's offense, unlike LSU. I still think this line reflects what Mississippi State did against LSU versus the Mississippi State that's probably not going to even be starting KJ Costello anymore. So, and I think Texas A&M can do enough on offense to win this game. I am going to predict that this game is also low scoring for those interested in that.
All right. I am going to take Notre Dame again. This is my third time taking them as my lock of the week. I'm 1-1, but I appreciated that Brian Kelly was going for it up 16 on 4th-and-2 or something to try to get us that cover. That's how I read it. That's how I read it. He might have been just trying to kill the clock against Florida State. Florida State covered, but it's only 17. The Louisville defense has allowed 47 to Miami, 46 to Georgia Tech. Notre Dame's got a good offense. They are running the ball. I'll take Notre Dame and quite happily make that my lock of the week. Sully, you get the last lock of the week.
All right. I'm taking the under in the battle for the beer barrel at 45 and a half. The last two times Tennessee and Kentucky have met, they barely squeaked over 30 points. Both these offenses look just about the same they have the past few years. Defenses are stout. Give me the under in Tennessee, Kentucky.
All right. Good stuff. That is the pod. We'll be back to overreact to everything on Monday in the overreaction edition. Lord knows how many of these games get played or who the hell's coaching them, let alone who's playing in them. But this is the pod. Enjoy. Hopefully we get this big time game on Saturday night that all of us who are patient with this sport deserve. The sport we love. Please follow us on social media or share us on social media. Subscribe, leave us nice reviews, whatever you got. We need all the listeners we can get so we can keep doing this. Talk to y'all Monday.
And Big Ten preview next week.
That's right,
for Big Ten loyal listeners. We got a little Big Ten preview next week.
I didn't even get into Iowa. It was one of the reports was someone found a big bag of meth in Iowa City.
They also found some snakes behind the courthouse too. So
snakes behind the. I mean, what? It seems like such a nice town.
How's that Busch Light sponsorship going for our Iowa City police log, Sully? Did we get that? We got that locked up yet?
We got to get done. Yeah. Not locked out yet though.
All right. I know you're close.
We'll take the
coffees for closers.
We'll take
closers,
buffalo
Sully.
Wing beer.
Yeah.
Take whatever you got. We'll take it. We're easy. All right. Talk to you Monday.